I hope you're doing well. Chodesh Tov. Obviously, Mishenichnas Adar Marvin Besimcha applies to Adar Aleph as well as Adar Beis, but Adar Beis is even more intense, and we hope it should indeed be a month of Yeshua for all of Klal Yisrael. We were looking again, we're at the very end of Perek Daled. Actually, I want to show you something today from almost the end of the book of Mishlei, but that is thematically connected. If you look at Perek Daled, just the next verse, which is Pasuk Chaf Vav, that's chapter 4, verse 26. So the Pasuk tells us, Pales Magal Raglecha V'chol Drachecha Yikonu. I'm not sure, I think we may have looked at it, I just want to comment briefly and then show you something later in the book. Pales is to balance the pathway of your feet, meaning to find the correct pathway, and all of your roads will be straightened out. And the Gra explains that there are two types of midos that a person has. A person is born with a certain nature, and that could be very good. In fact, it was very interesting. Somebody it just struck me. Somebody was corresponding to me about it, someone who lives in South America. And they and their wife just had a baby, and they were so happy, and they described the baby as being so kind. And you wonder, exactly, what does it mean for a one-month-old to be kind? But in a sense, you know, maybe, well, on the other hand, he said he wasn't sleeping, so it couldn't be that. But, you know, in a sense, you could see a type of personality that emerges very, very young. And therefore, that is called derech. Derech is the midot tovot that you are born with. And Baruch Hashem, that's a gift from God. That's certainly a gift. Not everybody has the same struggles. Everybody has some struggles in life. But some people don't have such a big struggle with anger and being tense because they're naturally born, laid back, and things don't bother them so much. But then, there's another avoda in which we are obligated to try to work on our midos and to improve our midos. And that is called hergel. That through habituation, we can turn hergel, ragil. Through hergel, we can turn even our midot ra'ot into midos tovos. But the Vilna Gaon says the following. If a person does not consciously try to improve their bad midos, they will lose even the good midos that they were born with. That all of the midos are interrelated. And if you don't consciously try to improve in the areas that need improvement, so you might think, okay, so I'm not going to improve in those areas, but at least I got the good qualities I was born with. The Vilna Gaon says no. On some level, you will even lose those good qualities. And he reads us into this pasuk in a very beautiful way. If you try to balance the hergel, raglecha, what you need to work on, then your derachim, your natural midos, will be well preserved. Shein kein, right? If one does not work on the midos ra'os, he compares midot to be beads that are strung on a string, that if some of the, you know, if the knot of the string is cut, then one bead falls off, all the beads are going to fall off. There is no done deal, which means that's pretty unfortunate, because what that basically means is there's nothing that you're guaranteed. Even the good stuff you were born with, we can lose if we don't consciously try to improve in those other areas. And that's a very, very important idea, that yes, a person is born with a certain amount of midot tovot, but they also require not necessarily consciously working on them, but to consciously work in the other areas so that you don't lose the midos tovos that a person was born with. So what I wanted to show you is really something further in the book, all the way in Perek Chaf Daled. But I'm going to discuss it today because it is connected. And Perek Chaf Daled, if you look at chapter 24... verse 30, Pasuk Lamed, Perek Chaf Daled, Pasuk Lamed, 24:30. And this is an extended mashal. This is a mashal of five psukim.
which for Mishlei, is a novel, basically, because normally the proverbs are very short. Al Sadei Ish Otzel Avarti. I passed by the field of a lazy man. The Al Kerem Adam Chasar Leif. And by the vineyard of a person, Chasar Leif, who's not thinking about what he needs to do. He behold, Allah Kulo Kimshonim. The field and the vineyard are filled with thistle and weeds. Because he's lazy, he's not taking care of something that could have produced so much. Kasu Panav Charulim. It is covered with thorns. We'll discuss the difference there. Vegeder Avanav Neherasa. And the stone fence that's supposed to protect, the stone wall that's supposed to protect the vineyard from animals or robbers. The wall itself is falling down. Animals can come in, etc. All of this is because of laziness. V'yechazah anochi. And I gazed at this. Ashisli bi. I thought about it. Ra'isi. And I looked again. Lokachti musar. And I wanted to take a lesson from the wages of laziness. Ma'at sheinot. A little bit of sleep, meaning kind of too much sleep. Ma'at tenumos. Slumbering at the wheel. Ma'at chibuk yadayim lishkov. Like when a person lies down, there's chibuk yadayim. His hands are like embracing each other. In other words, too much sleep. Again, it's not referring so much to how much you sleep at night. I mean, the Rambam says even 8 hours is proper, although very, very few people get 8 hours of sleep. And the Rambam himself never listened to his advice. I don't think the Rambam ever had 8 hours of sleep. But the issue is not sleep. The issue that's really being discussed here is a kind of inattentiveness, a laziness, not paying attention to your field. And what's going to happen? Uva mishalech reishecha. Your poverty shall come upon you like an unwanted guest. Now, you understand that these psukim have a very simple meaning as well. And basically, when you neglect things, things fall apart. Now, the particular example is an example of a field or a business, but it applies to everything. It applies to marriage, it applies to parenting, it applies to Limud HaTorah, that, you know, you can't just let things stay in a state of inertia. Things don't stay the same. If you don't consciously put in the energy and the effort to keep things in a good place, they disintegrate. This is even the law of entropy in physics. Things tend to wind down and fall apart. In fact, that's one of the I don't want to get technical. That's one of the arguments against the theory of evolution. That evolution, the scientific theory of evolution, presupposes that from simple organisms we developed into complex organisms. That is a contradiction to the law of entropy, in which systems wind down, as it were. They don't get more complicated. Unless, of course, there's a God that is putting the energy in to do those creations. But in terms of the normal processes of science, things fall apart. And in life, they certainly fall apart. Things fall apart, and that's what Shlomo HaMelech is warning us about. Pay attention to your life. So although he uses the idea of a field, but once again, we know that a field is a synonym also for a home and for a family. So the Pashat Pshat is perfectly valid and perfectly important, right, even before we get into the deeper meanings.
One thing, something about you don't grow up, you go down.
Yeah, well, no, the Vilna Gaon says it. The Vilna Gaon says it elsewhere. Again, a lot of the themes are repeated. He says that kol zman that you are not consciously going up, you will go down. The example I give is life is like a down escalator. So if you simply stand still, you're going to go down. You have, like you did when you were a kid, or I did when I was a kid, you try to walk up the down escalator. That takes a lot of energy, but that's the only way you're not going to be going down. Of course, the best thing to do is switch escalators, but okay. Alrighty. Now, the Gra, as is wont, does not disagree with this simple interpretation. This is absolutely a very important lesson in life, but he takes it a little deeper as well. And he offers two different explanations. He says, first of all, And look how careful he pays attention to every detail. Why are there two mishalim here? It says a field, which is grain, and a vineyard, which is grapes. Right? What is the significance of the two mishalim? And then you'll notice that there are two types of growths that are described. Kimshonim, which are weeds, and charulim, which are thorns that injure your hand, right? So we have two types of fields, and we have two types of weeds or growths, as well as the stone fence and the like. And why is the owner of the field called Otsel, but the owner of the kerem is called Chasar Lev? Now, Otsel means lazy. Chasar Lev means inattentive. But why is there that variation of language? And you'll also notice that the owner of the field is called Ish, and the owner of the vineyard is called Adam. All of these differences. Now again, some Rishonim are perfectly willing to say that this is a stylistic, poetic way of expression in which you alter, you're kind of repeating a message for emphasis, and therefore you stylistically use different synonyms. Ish, Adam, Sadeh, Kerem, etc. And therefore, and again, this may sound like a modern idea, but the Radak and the Ibn Ezra often say, Kefel ho'inyin v'milim shonot. Meaning, we don't have to give a different nuance. But as you know, this was a mahalach that the Vilna Gaon rejects. He says every single different expression has to have a meaning, and of course the Malbim later followed the same approach. So this is what the Vilna Gaon says. Again, he gives two explanations. Explanation number one is the following. He basically says the following. There is a Gemara that says that until the age of 40, eating is better than drinking. And after the age of 40, drinking is better than eating. Now, whether this is good dietary advice, I don't know for sure. Although they do say when you're older, a little alcohol every day. Drinking is wine here. Okay. But here's what the Vilna Gaon says the meaning of that Gemara is. The meaning of that Gemara is that halachic learning is called lechem, is called bread. Because that's the basic nutrition of life. I don't know how to live unless I know what Judaism says about Shabbos, about kashrus. But then, Agadah. Now Agadah, the parts of the tradition that don't deal with practical behavior, but that deal with ethics, with morals, with values, that is described as wine. That gives you a deep joy. It gives you a zest for living because it gives you the meaning of halacha. But agada without halacha, you just become an alcoholic because you're not rooted in the practical way Hashem wants you to live your life. So therefore the Vilna Gaon says the following. Halacha is described as lechem. Agada, which includes Kabbalah, mysticism and the like, is described as wine. And therefore, the meaning of Chazal's statement, until you're 40, again, it's addressed to a person learning Torah, emphasize the bread. Eat the bread. Because you have to know the basic laws of the Torah. After you're 40, your mind opens up. You're now capable, right, as we know, we say, don't learn Kabbalah till you're 40 years old. And that is when you can drink the wine. You're ready to drink the wine when you're 40 years old. Now that's one, so again, you'll see how he's going to create a whole bunch of images here. So image number one is that the practical aspects of Torah life are called bread. The more mystical, ethereal, philosophical parts of Torah we call agadata. And in agadata are the sodot, are the inner mysteries of the Torah. They are called wine. As a result, the Vilna Gaon brings the following. There's another Gemara, right? So Gemara number one is, until you're 40, eat, and after 40, drink. By the way, it's interesting, there was a Rav in Baltimore, this is before I was even born, this is Rav Michal Farshlanger. Some of you might, I don't know, some of you may have heard the name, they actually came out with a biography of him very, very recently. a great, great, great Talmud Chacham, really what you might call an unknown Gadol Hador. A person who had a shul of Balabatim, none of whom, Rav Farshlanger. A shul of Balabatim, none of whom had any idea who he was. In Baltimore. A great, great Gadol Talmud Chacham. And when the Ner Yisrael Yeshiva was founded in the 1930s, and my Rebbe, my Rosh Yeshiva, Rav Ruderman, came to Baltimore, so finally Rav Farshlanger had a friend that he would be able to talk to. Rav Farshlanger was older than Rav Ruderman. And Rav Farshlanger tried to get my Rosh Yeshiva to learn Kabbalah with him, because Rav Farshlanger, who already knew the Bavli, the Yerushalmi, the Shulchan Aruch, all of the Shalos and Tshuvas, the last 10 years of his life, he was just learning Kabbalah the whole time. And he kept on telling, Rashi, you gotta do this, there's nothing like this, this is the most amazing thing. But whatever, Ritterman did not want to get fully involved in that limud. But that's kind of the ideal progression, which we never reach really, and that is, after you've mastered the whole revealed Torah, put your energies into the deepest levels of Sod. That is the wine that the Vilna Gaon talks about. Now, he quotes another Gemara. The Gemara says in Masechet Shabbos, who is a rich person? A Zeyu Ashir. Now, you're going to say, Hasameach B'chelko. That's in Pirkei Avos, to be sure. This is a different answer. A Zeyu Ashir. Same question. Who is wealthy? Answer, Mi Sheyeshlo Meyak Chamim. A person that owns 100 vineyards, Umeya Sadas, and 100 fields, Umeya Avadim, and 100 servants. If you own 100 vineyards, and 100 fields, and 100 servants, you are Rashir. Says the Vilna Gaon, is that how Chazal would establish what wealth is? How much property you own? And if they mean physical wealth, then, you know, why are they teaching that? Who cares? I mean, whatever it is whatever it is. This reminds me a little bit, you may have heard of the famous story, the tragic story, of the Ger Tzedek of Vilna. This was a non-Jew who converted in the days of the Vilna Gaon, and he became a Talmud of the Vilna Gaon. And he was burnt at the stake. He was burnt at the stake the second day of Shavuos by the Polish authorities. And his ashes are buried to this day next to the Vilna Gaon in Vilna, the grave of the Ger Tzedek Mivilna. Now you have to know the story. The Ger Tzedek Mivilna was a child of the wealthiest landowner in Poland, the Potocki family. And because they had connections, they were able to get a treatment for their son, that if their son could continue to be Jewish privately, as long as he would not publicly say he was Jewish. And they mamish were able to cancel the death sentence. The son refused. He could have saved his life. And the son refused. He said he wanted to die al Kiddush Hashem. And he died al Kiddush Hashem. And the Vilna Gaon himself said later that all of the powers of impurity that exist in the world were shattered and broken as a result of this person's death. This person's death effected many, many amazing transformations. Now, the story that I want to say, I want to add a little bit, is just to show you how wealthy his father was. His father owned 999 fields and estates, not just fields, estates in Poland. And when somebody asked him, you could surely afford one more estate, why don't you make it 1,000? He says, no. If I have 1,000 properties, and people will say he has 1,000, people are going to say, well, that's an approximation, you know, maybe it's 950, so people say it's 1,000. But if I have 999, people know it's an exact number, and therefore they're going to know I have 999. Nobody's going to say that's an exaggeration. I mean, you don't exaggerate and say 999, you exaggerate with the round number. Okay, but be it as it may, therefore, what is the meaning of this enigmatic statement? Who is a wealthy person? 100 vineyards, 100 fields, 100 slaves. So the Vilna Gaon says the following. This is still a pretty demanding statement. If we understand that Agada and Medrash and Kabbalah are the wine of Torah, wine, Yayin, then 100 vineyards is a person who learns 100 midrashim, 100 agadot. And if we understand the Torah is compared to the bread that you get from a field, then 100 fields is 100 halachot. And the 100 slaves is 100 expressions that you are a slave of Hashem. That refers to the obligation that we all keep to recite 100 brachot. Because when you recite a bracha, you're declaring that you are a slave or a servant of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So who is a wealthy person? This is the Vilna Gaon's interpretation. The person that learns 100 agadot a day, 100 halachot a day, both of them are pretty much, and the third is one who recites 100 brachos a day. Now let me point out, the only one of those three that is brought in the Shulchan Aruch as a din is the last one. There is no din in the Shulchan Aruch that a person has to learn 100 halachos a day. That would be very, very difficult. I mean, it's possible. But the 100 brachot a day is in fact a law in the Shulchan Aruch. And once again, Shabbos is more of a problem than the week. Because normally, if a person, actually with women there may be more of a problem because it depends on whether a woman davens Maariv or the like. So I guess you have to eat more. I mean, that's always a problem. But you know, if you assume three Shemona Esrays a day, so every Shemona Esray has 19 brachos. So 19 times 3 already gives you 57. So the amidos themselves give you 57, and then you count other brachos and the like. Now Shabbos is a big problem, because although Shabbos we have 4 amidos, because we also have Musaf, but you understand every amida of Shabbos is only 7 brachos. So 4 times 7 is 28 instead of 57. So Shabbos there is a shortfall, which is why they say you make it up with eating extra things. Of course, it's not going to help you during the meal because it's covered by hamotzi, so it has to be. What can I do? I have to eat between meals. I mean, what can I do? It's a mitzvah, right? So it's one of those things that nebuch, somebody has to do it. So we do it. They tell the story of the brisker rav, that the brisker rav, I'll tell you, actually two stories about the brisker rav and the 100 brachas, two different stories, but they're both interesting. Story number one, the brisker rav, who lived in Eretz Yisrael after the Holocaust, used to go to Switzerland a lot. It was because he had an asthmatic condition and the air in Switzerland was better for him. And he also had a nephew in Switzerland, a Rosh Yeshiva in Switzerland, so he would go there. And he would stay at a hotel that was run by a Hasidic couple, very, very high standard in Kashrus and the like. And the Balat HaBayit always wanted to do something for him, make him some special dish or some type of chesed. He was a widower, you know, his wife had been killed in the Shoah. But you know, he didn't want cake. I mean, he didn't want anything. But one day he went over there after lunch and said, if it's not too much trouble, could you bring me an apple and a banana? So she was so excited that Baruch Hashem, a minor thing like this, that she gets to do a tova for the brisker rav. So when she brings him an apple and a banana, like later in the afternoon, he says, oh, thank you so much, I don't really need it, but thank you. So the question is, why did he ask for it? So the answer is, he made a cheshbon of mea brachot, and he saw that he was missing two. He needed two brachos. So he would make ha'etz on the apple, and ha'adama on the banana. But then what happened was, Shabbos Mincha, he's a Levi, he was called up for an aliyah that he didn't know he would be called up for. So he had two brachas, the bracha before and the bracha after. So he had 100. So it's kind of the idea that some people say, since, you know, I want to eat, so I'll make a bracha. Other people say, well, I have to make a bracha, so that's why I want to eat. If he didn't have to make a bracha, then he didn't have to eat. Of course, the only question is, why do you need an apple and a banana? I mean, even if you eat one fruit, there's going to be an after bracha. But maybe the pshat is he would eat less than a kezayis. He only wanted to eat the bare minimum, so there wouldn't even be a bracha acharona. Although that's hard to imagine that he would be that mitzamtzing. Now the second story is also halachically very interesting. It's a little off our topic, and that is that it was Rosh Chodesh, And one of his sons forgot to say Yalla V'yava. Mm-hmm. And as a result, in the daytime, you have to repeat the Shemona Esrei. Mm-hmm. So he told his father, he was a little ashamed. He said, Nebuch, you know, I wasn't thinking. I missed Yalla V'yava. I have to say Shemona Esrei again. So the Brisker Rav says, don't feel bad. That way you get extra brachos towards your 100 brachos on Shabbos by repeating the Amidah twice. Now, this sounds like a little story, but this is actually a very important halachic point that the Brisker Rav is implying to us, that the brachos in the Shemona Esrei that have to be repeated are still valid brachos towards the Cheshvan Me'ah brachos. I might have thought not that way. I might have thought if your Shemona Esrei is not valid, then fakert, the blessings are brachos levatala. Now you certainly don't fulfill 100 brachos by making blessings in vain. If I take a sitter and just recite 100 brachos without anything to eat, that's an avera. So the Brisker Rav's chiddush is that even a Shemona Esrei without a Yalla V'yavo, even though you're not yotzei the Amidah, it is still a valid bracha. That actually is a chiddush lahalacha. Now it's not a chiddush that we should do lechatchila. I mean, I wouldn't tell a person, be sure to skip Yalla V'yavo, so that way you get 7 extra blessings. But b'di'evet, if that's what happens, now maybe the Brisker Rav's thinking to himself, maybe the Brisker Rav didn't want his son to feel bad, so he just told him that. But yeah, that's not the derech of the Brisker Rav. The Brisker Rav would never compromise on the truth, no matter, especially with his children. He was very tough with his children. So if he said it, it must have been that was his shita. Yeah.
I think that the first question can be answered, that he was going to eat shalosh shottos, he was going to wash.
Yeah.
Then for dessert, if you have an apple or a
banana, for dessert. Okay, I hear.
Not a bracha.
No, that's a good teretz too. Meaning he was not. He was going to eat it in Suda Shalishis. I hear. No, good teretz. Good teretz. Okay. Alrighty. Alright. Now, so given that, right, so now what do we establish? We've established two related ideas here. One is that halacha and the practical teachings of Yadus are called bread. They are the basic staple of life. The deeper philosophical, ethical, agadic, and Kabbalistic ideas are called wine. Right? That's one thing. And that's the meaning of the Gemara. Until 40, after 40, drink more. Take in more wine, so to speak. And the second teaching is related to that, that the 100 vineyards are 100 agadot, and the 100 fields are 100 halachos. And the 100 avadim, which is a separate thing, is the submission to Hashem in 100 ways, which is the me'ah brachos. So based on that, Vilna Gaon says the following. The reason why Shlomo HaMelech uses two analogies for the lazy person. One is, I walked by the uncultivated field. And the other is, I walked by the vineyard that was not handled, is because it is referring to two types of neglect. One is the Talmud Chacham who neglects learning halacha. So that is like a field that has weeds in it. Meaning, even if the Talmud Chacham knows a lot, eventually, without chazara, without hasmada, he will forget. He will not know how to apply the din properly. And that's the laziness. Laziness in one's learning causes there to be weeds. What do weeds do? Weeds choke the ability of new growth, right? New understandings, deeper understandings will not emerge because the weeds choke. Now, the kerem is a person who does not learn the wine of the Torah, the agada, the philosophy, the ethics, the morality. Now, here, he is described as chasar lev. Because when it comes to halacha, any person can master halacha, as long as they're not lazy. In other words, laziness is the big thing. Because that's what Chazal say. If a person says, Yagati, I toiled and I worked, v'lo matzasi, and I was not able to understand, al tamen, we don't believe. But when it comes to agada, that's a different thing. Because agada is not only a matter of the mind, it is a matter of the heart. And therefore, even if a person might be a very hard worker,
But if his heart is not attuned to these inner meanings, they will not penetrate. And that is why, with respect to the Kerem, we don't call him an Otzel. We just say Chasar Leif. He lacks the emotional connection to be able to see this. Now, the Vilna Gaon then says, this is the difference between Kimshonim and Charulim. The way it works is the following. The Kimshonim is like an A-B-A-B structure. Meaning, the uncultivated grain field, which produces the bread, that has Kimshonim, weeds. If you're lazy and you don't learn, then the weeds choke the new growth. But when you neglect the agadic portions of the Torah, there is something worse than weeds. There is thorns. Now the difference between weeds and thorns is weeds prevent growth, but the weeds are not going to hurt me generally. If I walk into a field of weeds, unless it's poison ivy or something, generally speaking, weeds choke the growth, but they don't physically hurt me. Thorns can literally rip me apart. And here there's a remez, therefore, that when one approaches the agadic portions of the Torah without reverence and awe, not only won't he understand them, but they will actually hurt him because he's trying to be on a madrega that he's not capable of. This is the well-known idea that the Gra says many, many times, that when one tries to learn the deep secret parts of the Torah and they're not worthy, that could be mazik him, that could destroy him in many, many ways. Do you remember the teaching of the Mishnah about the four great, great rabbis, the great Talmidei Chachamim, who went into the sacred pardes, the sacred orchard, meaning going into the mysteries of the Torah? One became a heretic, a non-believer. One died. One became mentally imbalanced. And only the great Rabbi Akiva was nichnas l'shalom v'yatza b'shalom. He entered in peace and he left in peace. One has to know not to go to a madrega where they're not yet worthy of being. Like trying to be on the 10th story without building the first 9 stories. And that is why there's a shift in the imagery between Kimshonim and Charulim.
What's the second Kimshonim?
Kimshonim and Charulim. Kimshonim are weeds, and Charulim are thorns. And that is, when I am not putting my energies in halacha, I'm going to have weeds. But when I try to approach Kabbalah without the proper preparation, it's not just going to be weeds, it's going to be thorns. It spiritually is going to hurt me in ways, because I will be absorbing ideas that I don't have the capacity to maintain and to retain, and one might do all sorts of crazy things with it. One might even die. Again, it's hard for us to understand the process, but, you know, Rav Aryeh Kaplan, Zichrono Livracha, who was a Kabbalist in his own right, wrote a number of books on Jewish meditation. 3 books on Jewish meditation. One is called Jewish Meditation, one is called Meditation and the Bible, and the other is called Meditation and the Kabbalah. And he talks about the notion of, it's all based on Kabbalah, really. All 3 books are really based on Kabbalah. He talks about meditating on God's name, visualizing letters, and he draws from Kabbalistic Svarim, how one connects to God through this type of intense meditative experience, which can become a trance. And he says, do not do these things alone. Have another person in the room when you do it, because when your soul connects to God on that level, it literally wants to escape the bounds of the body, and you need somebody to kind of slap you and bring you back to earth. Now this sounds a little funny, but again, it's my unfounded speculation, for which I have absolutely no evidence, but I have a bit of an intuitive suspicion, so again, it's only a suspicion, that may have been what happened to Rabbi Kaplan himself. Rabbi Kaplan, as you know, died tragically young. He left many children, I think 10 children, an almana and 10 children. And perhaps this is what he was doing. Again, I don't know. I can't say for sure. But we do have a history, what can I tell you, of great Mekubalim dying young, including the Arizal, the greatest of the Mekubalim, died at 39. Rav Moshe Cordovero died in his mid-40s. Because you're playing with dangerous things. Now, I don't mean to say you pick up a book and they have a Kabbalistic thought, something's going to happen to you. That's not going to happen, because by the time Kabbalah gets in popular books, assuming they're kosher books, that's another issue, it's been pre-digested and diluted, and you don't have to worry. You know, that's not going to hurt you in that way. But when one goes back into the real, real deep meditation, there are dangerous things that can happen. In the language of the Arizal, the light may be too powerful for the vessel to contain. We are a vessel. The powerful light shatters the vessel. And then it's very, very difficult to reconstruct. So that is why it is described as charulim instead of kimshonim, because it's not just the weeds, it's the thorns. It'll actually be mazik you, hurt you, and the like. That's right. That's a chorban. It's a chorban. It's a chorban mamash. So that is why, in the Vilna Gaon's commentary generally, we actually have two contradictory messages. Because he says them both many times. One is, how important it is as we approach Geula, Mashiach, to occupy ourselves with what is called the Pinimius Shebetorah, the inner dimension of Torah. I don't know if the Gra would consider Chassidus to be, the Gra had disagreements with Chassidus, Chassidus, Kabbalah, Agada, Medrash, to understand the deeper levels of spirituality of these texts. That's one message that we get over and over again. The wine of Torah, and especially as we get older, after 40, so to speak, we need to drink more of that wine. And it's brought down again as we approach Mashiach, this becomes a greater necessity. But the second message is, don't go to levels that you're not ready to achieve. We have to know our limitations at the same time. So there's both a message of affirmation, go for it, and a statement of holding back a little bit. And in truth, by the way, Derech Agav, this is exactly the dance of the Malachim that are described in the Nevuah of Yechezkel. Right? Yechezkel had the great vision of the Kisei HaKavod, the celestial throne. Right? In fact, all of it is described in Yechezkel. It's called Maisa Merkava, the chariot of God. The Seraphim, the burning angels, the Ofanim, the angels that are the wheels of the chariot. The Chayos HaKodesh, the holy living creatures. Maisa Merkava. This is the Haftorah of the first morning of Shavuot. Well, the first morning in Eretz, the morning of Shavuot. Maybe we read it then because people are half asleep. So it's not a message we should automatically be listening to so much. In fact, I remember that, you know, the Art Scroll has a 3-volume commentary on Yechezkel written by one of my Rebbeim in Neri Yisrael, Rav Moshe Eisman. Some of you may have heard of. So he gives for the Maisa Merkava, which is Perek Aleph and Beis of Yechezkel, he gives only a relatively superficial commentary. He does not delve in depth. And on every single page, he has like a Surgeon General cigarette warning. He says, do not delve into this. You know, it's like every page, do not delve into this, etc. And the like. But one of the verses of the Maisa Merkava is it describes the myriads of angels, tens of thousands, millions of angels that are praising God. And it uses the very evocative phrase, Ratzo Vishov. Ratzo Vishov is they run forward and then they go back. And that is kind of the rhythm of one who wants to approach Hashem. You come as close as you can come, but then you have to go back. You have to know your limitations. You have to know. And therefore, that is the idea of kimshonim. I'm sorry, charulim. Charulim. If one goes to madregos that they're not ready for, it's not just they won't get it. It will hurt them. It will destroy them. in various ways. Now that's the first pshat that Vilna Gaon gives. Then he gives a second pshat, which doesn't take into account all of these differences, but it's just the general idea of the unattended field having weeds. And here the Gra makes a generic point. I think I may have mentioned this at the very beginning of our Mishlei series, but this is where he actually says it. And he says that weeds and thorns, without differentiating them, refer to the midos ra'os of a person. Bad midos. They are like the weeds and thorns that choke the productive growth in Torah that one could have. It chokes the ability of the field to produce Torah, and this is based on the idea that midos ra'os are like a mechitza. They are a wall of separation between man and God. And therefore you cannot perceive the truth of the Torah if there are bad midos. Now, you might be smart, you might have a lot of information, you might know assorted data here and there, but the true power of the Torah will not be in your neshama if there are midos ra'os. Here, the Gra says the astounding thought. Again, I think I mentioned it towards the very beginning of our class. That is, this is why Torah is compared to water. Chazal say Torah is compared to water. Right? Agada is wine, halacha is bread, but Torah as a whole is water. Now, there are a million reasons why Torah is compared to water. It refreshes the soul, it cleanses, it's necessary for life. It goes from the high ground to the low ground, so it leaves the arrogant and goes to the humble. But the Gra gives another reason why Torah is compared to water. Water poured on ground will facilitate the growth of whatever is in the ground. Water has what is called a koach of tzemicha. It causes growth. What that means is that if a person has good midos, a person is kind, compassionate, patient, the process of learning Torah will make him more so. Now that sounds good, but the second part is very controversial. He says, if chas v'shalom, a person has bad midos, Torah is like water. Pretty amazing. Torah is like water. Torah will make, or can make, the bad midos worse. If a person is a baal gaiva, it can make a person more arrogant. This is what the Gemara means when it says Torah is like an elixir. It's like a sam. Zocha, if you merit, sam chayim. It is an elixir of life. Lo zocha, which the Vilna Gaon interprets to mean a person has midot ra'ot, sam maveth. Now, I mentioned, I had once said this. I don't say this thought anymore publicly, except in this. This is the only share that I say this, because I once mentioned it in Lakewood, and the person just denied. He says, it is absolutely impossible. De Vilna Gaon never said it. He never said it. You know, no. Okay, it's Perek Chaf Dalet, Pasuk Lamed Aleph. It is said. And indeed, it is difficult. It is a difficult passage. So I don't want to get into fights with people, so I just don't say this. But the point is, it is a difficult passage, because the truth of the matter is one could find many Mamore Chazal that talk about Limud Torah as healing. Barasi Yetzer Hara. I have created the Yetzer Hara. Hashem says, Barasi Torah Tavlin. I've created the Torah to be a medicine, to heal us from the Yetzer Hara. So there's a difficult chicken and egg bit of problem here. Do I have to have good midos before I learn Torah? Because otherwise the Torah is going to make my midos worse? Or the other way around, is Limud HaTorah the method of curing my midos? The Vilna Gaon, actually in different parts of Mishlei, says both ideas. Torah is the vehicle for character transformation. But then he says, there has to be a character transformation before you learn Torah, or the Torah is going to be mekalkel the midos. And you will find both ideas in Chazal and both ideas in the Perush HaGra. So apparently, it is kind of a simultaneous thing, meaning to say, the Vilna Gaon is basically saying, that is why he is credited with being the forerunner of the Musar movement of Yisrael Salanter, because Limud HaTorah alone can make you worse unless you actively strive to uproot the weeds. You got a weed. Again, the analogy to weeds might be good, because you don't necessarily have to weed your garden before you plant, but it has to at least be a simultaneous process. If you want to plant and get good stuff, you got to be taking out the weeds as you're planting, at least. Because otherwise, you're going to make the weeds better. Right? So the analogy to the weeds is very, very telling. In other words, it's not enough to plant the wheat and water the field and fertilize, because if you don't get rid of the weeds, that's what you're going to get. That's what he says. Now, again, we talked about this before, that you know that when Rabbi Yisrael Salanter wanted to introduce into every yeshiva the idea of Musar, working on Midot, and not just learning, you know, 15 minutes a day a Musar Sefer, but having Vadim group sessions where people would, you know, these may be hours long, in which people would introspect and make a Cheshbon HaNefesh. There were some Gedolim who thought this was not right. Torah will cure all ills. This was Rav Chaim Soloveitchik. This was the Brisker Sheet. And the Chafetz Chaim said, again, it fits what the Vilna Gaon is saying, the Chafetz Chaim said that Torah is the diet of a healthy soul. When a soul is healthy, Torah will give that soul life and health. But when someone is seriously ill, they need to augment their diet with medication. And he says, the Musar is the medication for the sicknesses of the soul. And what are the sicknesses of the soul? Kina, jealousy, tava, right? Whatever it would be. Lust, ego. These are sicknesses of the soul. And when there are sicknesses of the soul, you have to augment Limud HaTorah. Not replace it. Augment Limud HaTorah with Musar and the like. So again, and the basis of that teaching is the Gra and Mishlei. Now, one thing, as I say, the one thing the Gra could never be accused of is, you know, if somebody, okay, whatever, if a Hasidic Rebbe, let's say, might have said, you know, don't learn so much, do something. You know, the Vilna Gaon could not be accused of not having a chashivas for the Limud HaTorah. And yet, the Gra himself talks about how important it is for there to be the Tikkun HaMidos. So these are his two explanations of this section, right? The first explanation is contrasting the field and the vineyard based on Halacha, which is bread, and Kabbalah, and Musar, and Medrash, which is wine. The second is not, again, yeah, one problem that when you learn the Perush HaGra'ah Mishlei is that when multiple pshatim are given, not every pshat addresses every question that was raised in the other pshat. It's not like, this is how we answer all these questions, now we have another explanation, how we answer all these questions. Rather, the Gra said these explanations at different times, and he did not always explicitly state how every explanation answers every set of questions. So in the second explanation, there really is no differentiation between vineyard and field, and between weeds and thorns. It's just a general important idea that the growth of your productivity in Torah will also have weeds and thorns unless you consciously try to uproot the weeds and the thorns by working on your midos. But at this point, he doesn't fully explain the differences and the nuances. But the amazing thing is that the Gra acknowledges that Torah without tikkun HaMidos is a matzmiach like mayim, and it could actually cause a hashchasa, a destruction of the midos. Okay, alright, so that's what I wanted to share with you. Now another pasuk, again I'm skipping because these are connected. If you look in Perek Chaf Hei, the next chapter, And again, you'll see, I mean, we're in Perek Dalet, but these are like supplementary verses that connect. This is Perek Chaf Hei, Pasuk Chaf Aleph. Chapter 5, verse 21. No, Perek Chaf Hei, 25. Yeah, I'm going. Yeah, Perek Chaf Hei, 25, verse 21. And this is also a very, very famous verse. Im ra'ev sonacha. If your enemy is hungry, hachileu lechem. Give him water. No. I'm going to give him bread. Feed him bread. Im tzameh. If he is thirsty, hashkeyu mayim. Give him water. Again, simple meaning. Again, simple before we get to any complex interpretations. Don't take revenge. This seems to be a statement, a reiteration of lo sikom. The Torah says, don't revenge people who have done bad things for you. So he might be my enemy, he might have hurt me, he might have done bad things to me, he might have said bad things to me, but when he is in need, give your enemy food and drink. So far, so good, but the next pasuk seems to take away a little bit of the moral luster. Why? Ki gachalim ata chote al rosho. That's the best revenge. To take the guy who thought you were no good and then show him how great you are. That's like putting coal on top of his head. He's going to hate it. Again, there's a little bit of a problem here because it seems to say, be nice to him. Because that's the best revenge, which happens to be true. But certainly, we would not say, as a matter of Musar, that the reason you should be nice to your enemy is because that's the way you really get him. Right? Because we know, if I treat him bad, he'll just use that as confirmation of what a bad person I am, although it's because of his behavior. But if I treat him good, what's he gonna do? So, you understand that the Pshuto Shel Mikra is a little difficult here, because it seems to be suggesting kindness to your enemy in order to make him feel bad. And that's lo titor, that's 100% correct, that's right. The Torah has two lavin, 100% right. Lo sikom is a guy needs to borrow something from me, and he didn't lend me something when I needed it, so if I say, I'm not giving it to you, that's called nekama. If I say, yes, I'm giving it to you because I'm not like you, that's called bearing a grudge, and that is usher. So l'chaira, the behavior that's being advocated here seems to be netira. In other words, I want him to know how bad he is, right? So because of this, the Gra gives a different interpretation of the verse, a symbolic interpretation, and he says that sonecha refers to your yetzer hara. That is the biggest enemy in my life. That is the enemy that wants me to fail. That is the enemy that is setting me up to do bad things with all sorts of strategies and tricks and psychological. So here, if your enemy is hungry, like imagine the vicious attack dog or the lion or the tiger that didn't eat that day. The Yetzer Hara is looking to get you. So what you do is, hachileu lechem. So here again, remember the Vilna Gaon learned that lechem is Torah learning, the halachic part of Torah learning. Now here, he does switch analogies. Here, he uses mayim for agada. So it's interesting. So agada is sometimes referred to as wine, and sometimes it's referred to as water. And the Gra offers no explanation for why we switch the analogies like this. But the Vilna Gaon says, this is a reference to the Gemara that says, Impaga bacha menuval zeh. If the disgusting menuval, the Yetzer Hara, is trying to get you, mashcheyu lebeis hamedrash. Pull him into the beis hamedrash. Now, this is actually one of the countertexts. In other words, this is the countertext, because before the Vilna Gaon said, without working on your midos, the Torah will be destructive. Here, we're saying, when the Yetzer Hara attacks you, go to the base, HaMedrash, And therefore, if Yetzer is hungry, give him a diet of bread and water. Bread, the halachic parts of the Torah. Water, the musar, the hashkafa, the panemius of the Torah. Because that is how you put coals on him, meaning get rid of him. You diminish the Yetzer. Now, there's more to this I'll say for next week, but I just want to point out that the Vilna Gaon says the following. The Gemara in Sukkah uses this words, Impaga b'cha menuval zeh. If this menuval, disgusting entity, is pogeya, it encounters you, mashchehu, pull him into the Beis HaMedrash. What is the lashon of pulling him into the Beis HaMedrash? Why don't you just say, disengage yourself from him? So he says, no. You sometimes have to bring the Yetzer Hara into the Beis HaMedrash. Because sometimes, what do Chazal say? Ideally, you learn Torah and mitzvot for the sake of Hashem. But what do we say? A person should even learn Torah and do mitzvot. Not lishma. For honor. For recognition. For kavod. It's not ideal. But mitoch shelo lishma. By doing it shelo lishma, balishma. So therefore, here's the idea. When the Yetzer Hara is strong, use even your baser nature as an encouragement. In other words, tell yourself, you know, if I have, you know, these guests over for Shabbos, or if I learn X, Y, and Z, people are going to look up to me, people are going to respect me. Now, they may be improper motivations, but that's what it means. Take the Yetzer Hara and use it as a motivator, and that is called mitoch shelo lishma, balishma. Okay? Okay, so we'll stop here. Again, there's more to this, but I'll save it for next week.